Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. People are now saying that not only is pizza addictive, they can tell you why. And I know that there are people that are addicted to food, that are addicted to certain types of food. You know, there's a show that I watch when it's on. It was just on the other night on TLC called My 600-Pound Life. And I remember, and by the way, I watch that show because I root for people to get better. I'm an optimist. That's why I watch that show. And another interesting part of that show is watching them try to get some of these people out of their houses. It's incredible. Sometimes it takes a dozen EMS workers. It's wild. But anyways, there was this one guy on the show, and he even admitted it. He was addicted to pizza. And if he didn't have any money to call and get the pizza, he would make his father do it. And if his father ever threatened him saying, look, I don't have any more money, which he tried, this guy was like 800 pounds. He would say, I'm calling the cops. Dad, I'm going to say you're abusing me in my home. And the father would always fall for it and call and order the guy a pizza. But now they're saying why pizza is addictive and that people are literally addicted to pizza. It's because cheese is addictive. Bread is addictive. You put those two things together and then you put sauce on top of it, forget about it. That's why experts are saying that pizza is addictive, because the things that people are addicted to when it comes to eating and food, they're in pizza.
Okay, then why couldn't this gentleman, why does he have to have, why couldn't he just take a loaf of bread and some cheese, and I guess you could throw a jar of ready-made sauce in there. Why would that not be, why would that not satiate him?
Well,
does it have to be pizza?
Well, he was 800 pounds, and he couldn't get out of bed to make that stuff. And you pick up the phone, and you push a button. Within 20 minutes, somebody's at your door with something that's fresh and hot.
But do you see my point? So I tend to disagree with that just based on the fact that it's sheer ingredients.
Well, pizza was...
Number one, you're saying bread. Well, it's not bread. It's crust. It's a specific... it's a specific recipe that you put those ingredients together and you bake them for a prescribed. You know, I'm bandying words with counsel and I'm trying to put too fine an edge on it. But I'm skeptical so far. But go ahead.
Well, pizza was recently ranked as the food most associated with addiction, with indicators of addiction, according to a new recent study. But, and it makes you wonder what about pizza? What is it that makes it so universally craved? And it says it's the perfect combination of ingredients.
But taking those ingredients separately, it doesn't work that way.
Well, look, I love cheese. Love cheese?
Well, everyone loves cheese.
I love bread, crust, whatever
right,
you want to call
it. But you don't sit and eat, you don't go, you're not like, oh my God, I'm craving bread and crust.
No, but
bread and cheese.
But how many times when you go out to dinner, Brewster, if they put a loaf of bread, a warm loaf of bread, but now we're not talking
about pizza. That's what I mean.
But
that's where these studies fall apart.
But you combine that. Imagine if you had melted cheese over that warm loaf of bread that just came to your dinner table.
Okay, it's still not pizza. It's still, it's to me, it's like a medical study or a scientific study done by people without without enough education.
Well, when
go ahead. I'm listening. I'm trying to be open-minded to this, but go ahead.
When asked about this study...
I'm damned hungry right now, too.
When asked about this study, the managing editor of PMQ Pizza Magazine...
That rag.
Bill Desjardins said, quote, it's the holy trinity of crust, cheese, and sauce.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Because you could put any topping on top of that, pepperoni, sausage, you know, pineapple, whatever, but it's those first three ingredients. And that's why cheese pizzas still sell
That's another thing I don't understand. I've never understood the attraction to a cheese pizza.
I like cheese
pizza. And I understand there are people, well, see, but you've spent time in the Northeast. That's a religion there. I love Chicago style because I'm from the Midwest. So a lot of it is just what you're exposed to earliest and first. Now, don't get me wrong. I like a good New York style pizza too, but not cheese. Not a cheese pizza. If I were to, I would never become a vegetarian. I couldn't do that. If I had to, let's say there was some medical reason why I had to, all right? Because after having open heart surgery, they're like, you need to be careful with red meat and et cetera, et cetera. Eat more fish, eat more chicken, et cetera. If I ever had to become a vegetarian, I would not crave cheese pizza. It's just that's
interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
I would never say what you just said moments ago, which is I love cheese pizza. I don't get that.
Mm. Well, a sensory scientist named Herbert Stone, who's been for the past 50 years working with some of America's top pizza companies in order to enhance pizza's appeal to customers, says that combination, when heated, has enormous appeal. It's addictive because there is nothing offensive about it. And he's talking about the cheese, the crust, and then the sauce.
But for people who are on gluten-free diets, that's out the window because most dough recipes for pizza crust, that's out the window. For people who are lactose intolerant, which I am, but cheese doesn't tend to bother me, That's out the window too. And then people, I can't imagine someone who has maybe a tomato allergy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to break these things down individually, and I don't know. I'm on the fence about this whole study.
I feel sorry for all of those people you just mentioned.
Sure,
life's pretty tough for them. I mean, it's like the people that are allergic to peanuts and could die if they're around a peanut.
Right.
I mean, if you think that a peanut could kill you from just smelling or eating it, maybe this life isn't for you. You know, I don't know. I mean,
what's the alternative?
That kind of stinks for the lactose intolerant crowd, and you know, the people that can't eat bread.
Right. This time of year, the month of December, I love eggnog and spike that with a little bourbon, a little Kentucky corn squeezins, but I have to go buy the kind. It's at a specific grocery store that is for people who are lactose intolerant, because you do not want me in this studio. You don't want to be near me if I were to drink like whole milk or and it's just, I lack. Now, when I was a kid, I would drink gallon after gallon of whole milk.
Yeah.
And had no problem, but I've developed I've lost the ability my body's lost the ability to create the enzyme that I need to break down the milk sugars, and therefore I'm lactose intolerant. Like many Asian people, Asian cuisines feature nothing, almost no milk products, dairy.
Too bad you share that with Asian people and not their affinity for math. That's
offensive, but you know, that doesn't add up.
Well, anyways. Pizza is very addictive, and that's the reason why they say it's the holy trinity of those three.
And that, I say, doesn't add up.
On Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans and Lamarck Ford. Something really cool is going on in New Orleans this weekend. It started last night, and it goes through Sunday. And if you're looking for something to do, I highly recommend it. It's called Luna Feet
Fet.
Oh, no wonder why I didn't see many feet there last night.
You want to start over? Bayou, 95.7, Orleans' only classic rock station.
Luna Fet. It's happening in Lafayette Square Park. And then right around there, a couple of streets around there, walking towards the Mississippi River, there's art up and down the street. Basically, if you ask me, what is it? It's lights, it's art, and there's just a bunch of people. And it's really cool. And I was strolling around last night, and they put the lights put on this wild show on Gallier Hall. The lights are coming from Lafayette Square Park. They go across the street, and they put on this massive light show on Gallier Hall.
It trans. I had never been to it. Mrs. Brewster and I went last year. I think she had been a few times before. But there's if you've got that great spot in front of Gallier Hall, there's a music presentation that and they actually have like a giant clock that shows you like when the next. It's almost like Disneyland. It shows you when the next
light show is
and
coming.
The next presentation is. And if you've never seen it, I mean, it actually transforms a building, a stone or whatever. That building's made of, to where you don't see the building anymore.
It's really neat.
It's just it's hard to describe. And our where we are, we actually walk through some of it. Now it's not lit up now, but it's just it's really cool to think that for they've been working on it all week, pretty much setting it up, and then by Monday when we come to work, it'll be gone.
Yeah, and again, there's really good food. There's adult beverages. There's kids beverages. I recommend it if you're looking for something to do. Luna Fete here in downtown New Orleans. So the other day, comedian Kevin Hart was named the Academy Awards host. That lasted for 2 days because last night, Kevin Hart stepped down as the host for the Academy Awards, the Oscars. Why did he step down? There was a lot of outcry over some old tweets he made, homophobic tweets. Here's something else. And Brewster, you've heard, how many times have we said on this show, people on social media, costing them jobs, costing them work, costing them relationships because of what they say on Twitter or Facebook. And so Kevin Hart, here's what's interesting. They said GLAAD got involved, you know, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance. And they said, look, all we want you to do is apologize. And he said no. He said, I refuse to apologize.
So I just got a call from the Academy, and that call basically said, Kevin, apologize for your tweets of old, or we're going to have to move on and find another host. Talking about the tweets from 2009, 2010. I chose to pass. I passed on the apology. The reason why I passed is because I've addressed this several times. This is not the first time this has come up. I've addressed it. I've spoken on it. I've said where the rights and wrongs were. I've said who I am now versus who I was then. I've done it. I'm not going to continue to go back and tap into the days of old when I moved on and I'm in a completely different space in my life. The same energy that went into finding those old tweets could be the same energy put into finding the response to the questions that have been asked years after years after years. We feed in the internet trolls and we reward them. I'm not going to do it, man. I'm going to be me. I'm going to stay in my ground. Regardless, Academy, I'm thankful and appreciative of the opportunity. If it goes away, no harm, no foul.
Look, so he says he's not going to apologize, yet his last tweet last night, he apologized. He said, quote, I have made the choice to step down from hosting this year's Oscars. This is because I do not want to be a distraction on a night that should be celebrated by so many amazing, talented artists. I sincerely apologize to the LGBTQ community for my insensitive words from my past. That was his last tweet. He apologized. If he did that a couple hours before, that's all they wanted him to do.
Because in the clip we heard there, he says at the end, and if it goes away, so be it. It's a little hard to, it wasn't the best quality audio. So obviously that clip that was recorded before he tweeted what you read. I mean, look, the guy's got a career to protect. But basically, I think if you distill it down, he's saying, look, I've talked about this. I've apologized before. I'm not going to keep going on. And he kind of took a shot at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and their board, whoever picks the host. I think it's upon them in this day and age. It's not hard to find out what people have said on social media, you know, who didn't do their homework there?
We talked about Kevin Hart, was it a week ago? A week or two? Him and his wife were taking a lot of heat. They threw a themed party. Remember, were they dressed up? Was it Mexicans or Cowboys and Indians? We talked about it on the show.
It was one or the other.
And
I'll look it up.
It was a themed party that they had, and the people that came to the party dressed up. It was either they dressed up as Mexicans or Cowboys and Indians, and it pissed off a bunch of people. Like, everything seems to piss off people these days. Look, I like Kevin Hart. I think the guy's funny. But I got to be honest with you. You know how 95 or 97% of black people in this country are Democrats? I got to be honest with you. I know there's a lot of black people that aren't down with everything that the Democrats are down with. And that's including a lot of the LGBTQ stuff. Remember Tracy Morgan, the comedian that used to be on Saturday Night Live? He had to apologize for gay jokes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot. But here's what Kevin Hart said. Most of these anti-gay tweets were dated in between 2009 and 2011. That's when Twitter basically first started, right? But they had already been he's deleted all of them, but they've already been screen grabbed, screen captured, and been shared online. In 2011, Kevin Hart tweeted, in a tweet that he has since deleted, "Yo, if my son comes home and tries to play with my daughter's dollhouse, I'm going to break it over his head and say in my voice, stop, that's gay."
Real progressive attitude there. Well, 10 years ago.
This is how many people felt for many years, but now you're not allowed. Brewster, you're...
No, you are allowed. You can do whatever you want to do.
Maybe you're allowed to think that. You are just not allowed to say that anymore.
You can say it, too, it's the consequences.
The consequences. No such thing as freedom of speech without repercussions. And here are the repercussions.
Don't you think that the board, we'll just call them the board. I'm not going to keep saying the academy of all that. Don't you think the onus is upon them to do the research?
Known. Yeah. Yeah.
Because like I said, when he took I think it's like a little bit of a shot at them, he said the energy that went forth to look this up. I forget what he said after that, but you know what I mean.
No, he's right. If you spend that much energy and time going back, that energy and time looking forward and trying to make things better?
Right.
And I guess in their minds, they think they are making things better by making him either apologize or remove him as host.
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, it used to be there was a reporters and people in media would use something called, it was like a search thing called LexisNexis. And it was basically you could pull any clip of anything any notable had ever said, and it was right there in front of you. I can't imagine that now, in 2018, everybody has that at their disposal. It's called Google or whichever search engine you want to use. So it's just I'm not making a comment on his. I'm not going to comment on something he said 10 years ago. I don't want people. I don't want to talk about things I said 10 years ago.
Well, in his 2010...
But they should have done their homework.
In his 2010 stand-up comedy act called Seriously Funny, he said, quote, "One of my biggest fears is my son growing up and being gay," unquote. Keep in mind, and I'm quoting here, "I'm not homophobic. I have nothing against gay people. Do what you want to do, but me being a heterosexual male, if I can prevent my son from being gay, I will." Now, don't you think most fathers feel that way about their sons? They're just not allowed. You're not allowed to say it anymore. You are not allowed to say it anymore without being looked at as hateful and bashing people.
I'll go you one better. I would say that I don't want to say the overwhelming majority, but I would say that a lot of African-American fathers think that especially.
Well, that's why, yeah, I mentioned that. And again, 93 to 97% of black people are Democrats in this country, but the Democrats are all for the they're all for gays and the LGBTQ and sharing bathrooms and they're
but
all
the blacks of that party aren't necessarily down with that.
Historically. They're not. And I believe as we sit here today, many black Democrats are not down with that. That's a schism in the Democratic Party. But you're just not allowed to say it anymore.
Right.
We live in a time, Brewster, where people cannot say how they truly feel about things because they're afraid of the repercussions. They're afraid. So we're just, I call it political correctness. They're afraid to say what's on their mind. They're afraid to say how they really feel about certain things because they know it could be the end of their career. It could cost them lots of money. Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that's a positive in this country?
I'm thinking.
So they move the Academy Awards. I don't really care about this show, but it's at the end of February. So now they've got, they only got upwards of 3 months to find. The last time someone was removed as the host of the Academy Award, it happened in 2012. The show's producer, Brett Ratner, who's been caught up in the hashtag Me Too movement, big time Hollywood producer, he had been paired with Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy was going to be the host, but Ratner was going to write everything and produce it. Hmm. Once Ratner went down, Eddie Murphy resigned because he said, this is my guy.
Right.
And this was in 2012. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But isn't that something? Some people would say that this is progress. Is it progress? If people feel something, but they're just not allowed to say it anymore, you think it's going to change the way they feel? You think suddenly now Kevin Hart is going to want gay children, want gay sons?
Well, I know what he doesn't want to do. He doesn't want to keep apologizing. And he's made that clear. And I tend to agree with him on that. How many apologies are enough in this day and age?
But then he apologized in a tweet he made after he was removed. So I don't get it. Coming up next. Hey, you see who was back in town last night making a speech? And I didn't agree with some of the speech. Former New Orleans Mayor Mitch Half Moon Landrieu. Wait till you hear what he said. That's coming up on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. We are officially in Christmas season. I love Christmas. I'm a fan. Gingerbread is really big, too. And according to a new study, how you eat a gingerbread man says a lot about your personality. If you bite into the head first, you're aggressive. If you eat the arms first, you're skeptical. And if you go for the crotch first, you're probably in the TSA. Yeah, airport security over there. Coming up next, Mitch Half Moon Landrieu, the former mayor, was in town again last night. And he made a speech. And I didn't agree with what he said. We'll tell you about that coming up next on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans, and Lamarck Ford. Guess who made a speech in New Orleans last night? I haven't seen this guy in a while. Former mayor, Midnight Mitch, Half Moon Landrieu.
Baldy.
He made a speech last night. He spoke during a panel in the Cities for Tomorrow conference, and it was over at the Contemporary Arts Center. And that conference is going on through Saturday. It's hosted by the New York Times.
That rag.
Along with NOLA Media Group. They're the publisher of NOLA.com. Mm-hmm. The Times-Picayune. Mitch Landrieu, Midnight Mitch, Half Moon, said a couple of things that were very interesting. One of the things he said, quote, New Orleans needs a couple of generations of solid leadership to succeed, unquote. That's what he said. Well, didn't we have that with you and your father, Moon Landrieu? Because Moon Landrieu was a mayor here in New Orleans, and then his son, That's why I always called him Half Moon, because he was never his father.
He didn't think of that during his time in office?
That's what he says about this. And I disagree with that. And Brewster, you get mad at me because I've said this so many...
I don't get mad. I get even.
Well, because what I'm about to say, I have said several times, ad nauseum. But what I'm about to say proves...
Oh, just say it for the love of God.
Mitch Landrieu was wrong with what he said last night. Rudolph Giuliani cleaned up New York City in a year. A year!
I didn't say you were wrong. I just, for about the first 9 months of this program, you were basically soliciting him to come down here, and I kept telling you that wasn't going to happen. And I think you finally realized that.
The blueprint is there. And it's interesting. Mitch Landrieu does not talk about people getting shot in this city every day. He doesn't talk about that. He says, you know, we've come a long way since Hurricane Katrina. And then he says, quote, there's no way that you could fix everything in 8 years. He was defending him being a mayor. There are only so many hours in the day and so many dollars, and given what we had to do. And look, when Mitch Landrieu took over, the city was a disaster. I mean, the guy that he took over for was on his way to prison, Ray Nagin. The guy lost his mind while he was mayor.
Baldy.
And so, but when he was talking at this speech last night, he was just talking about people in poverty, and he was talking about water sea levels. I mean, sea levels. He's talking about sea levels standing in a city where people get shot every day. How many cities in the United States can say people get shot every day in the city? Landrieu didn't even bring that up last night.
Chicago.
And it's only pretty much one part of Chicago, one neighborhood. But that's it.
Well, it's only pretty much one or two neighborhoods here.
Mm.
I'll take dope hits for 200, Alex.
Although even though we have some very rough neighborhoods in this city, some of these guys, these shooters, they find themselves out of those neighborhoods. But you know, Landrieu, he was talking about poverty, the biggest issues in this, poverty and rising sea levels. Really?
Well, you can see how poverty begets the kind of crime we're talking about, but sea levels, I don't quite understand. As far as the top 10 problems of the city.
Yeah, well, you know, the global warming.
Nobody asked me, but...
The climate change people, Brewster, they think that's the biggest problem.
Right.
Even though we live in a city where people get shot every day, and that doesn't happen in very many cities in this country.
I hear that we're 500 to 800 cops short.
Yes,
I keep hearing that.
That too. Isn't that incredible? So Mitch Landrieu, Half Moon, last night says it's going to take a couple of generations of solid leadership to succeed. No! Look what happened in New York City. It was a cesspool. And I know there's a lot of people on the political left, a lot of Democrats that don't like the way Rudolph Giuliani cleaned up New York City, because you could use the term stop and frisk. You could use a couple of other terms that they don't like. They do not. Even though it's safe to say in the city of New Orleans, it's only one demographic who's committing 99% of the violent crime. It's young black males. You can't keep an extra eye on that demographic. You can't do anything different with that demographic than you do with any other demographic, because it wouldn't be fair. Well, excuse me. If there's only one demographic that's committing most of the crime in this city, Mitch Landrieu, New Orleans needs a couple of generations of solid leadership to succeed. Our biggest problems are poverty and rising sea levels. Rising sea levels? Jesus. Didn't Al Gore say by 2013 we were all going to be dead or close to it?
I think 2030, not 2013.
I think it might be
2013.
We're all still here.
Yeah, we're on borrowed time then. I say make the best of it.
Look, and I'm not saying that climate change and rising sea levels, I'm not saying that it's not an issue, but it's not an issue that is in our face right now that is threatening. When you live in a city where people get shot every day, that is an issue that is in your face right now. Right now.
This is an unfortunate set of circumstances where we're having a threat at a time when we're not in our strongest position.
Plus, when Half Moon Landry was mayor, he did things like free swim lessons. Maybe that's what he should have done to combat rising sea levels. More free swimming lessons. And he had his midnight basketball and all of that. So, isn't that something? Half Moon Landry, speaking in New Orleans again last night. Couple of generations, that's what New Orleans needs, of solid leadership.
A chocolate New Orleans.
Jesus. On Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. I like the fact that the NFL lets the players celebrate again when it comes to when they score a touchdown. You know, there used to be some dancing, and then the NFL got really strict, and they said no celebrating. And right. Then a couple of years ago, I think last year they opened it up. They said, and now there are choreographed, organized with the offensive line, and I get a kick out of that.
They're doing the group photos, which is funny. What actually constitutes taunting now? Then after a score.
If you get in a defender's face, if you get in an opponent's face and you point in his face mask,
because that used to, the celebrations used to come under the taunting rule.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of another one that was really clever last Sunday.
Well, even though I'm personally, when I played football as a kid, Brewster, if I ever scored, I would just hand the ball back to the ref. But I enjoy watching the celebrations. It adds a little bit of fun to the game.
I think what they do get carried away with is on individual downs or a sack. I mean, you don't need to run 40 yards down the field after you participate in a great block tackle. I mean,
but the NFL will still fine you if you use a prop, much like Michael Thomas did
right
here in North. On Thanksgiving Day, Ezekiel Elliott dropped $21 in Dallas in the stadium there into the Salvation Army thing. And the big kettle behind the end zone, and he got fined for it. He thinks it's ridiculous, and I think it's ridiculous, too. I guess that was a prop. I don't know. Coming up next, it's Why Today Doesn't Suck. Suck is next on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans, and Lamarck Ford. Let's look at today in history. And on this show, we call the segment
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
December 7th, well, the day that will live in infamy in United States history, because it was today that Pearl Harbor was bombed by Japan. And I always wonder what would have happened if Pearl Harbor wasn't bombed, because Pearl Harbor being bombed is the only reason we got involved in World War II.
Right, because the next question would be, how soon would we have gotten into World War II?
How soon would we have found out what they were doing with Jewish people? And you wonder.
Exactly, because people were seeing it when they would go to movies for entertainment. And it would be part of the movie tone news, the newsreels that you would see with the previews at the movies, and people weren't believing it. They couldn't believe. Of course, you weren't seeing the graphic nature of what you see in some of the concentration camp. I almost said video, but film.
Yeah, we had no idea until we got over there.
That's a great question. Geopolitically, what? If not for Pearl Harbor, what would have brought us into World War II?
Yeah, because that's why we got into it. It was a Sunday morning today in 1941. It was 7:55 a.m. Hawaii time. 360 Japanese warplanes And I don't know what they were thinking. Did they actually... How stupid was Japan? Did they think that they were going to beat us? I mean, how dumb. And now you think of Japanese people, they're very smart. But how dumb was the leadership of Japan by bombing Pearl Harbor? Talk about waking up a sleeping giant, kicking a dead dog, whatever the case may be. And boy, that ended up killing 2,400 Americans. It wounded another 1,200. And out of the 2,400 that were killed, about half of that number were all on one ship.
Right.
The USS Arizona, which those guys are still down there to this day.
Right. I saw a sobering bit of information this morning. For the first time ever, there will be no actual survivors of the Arizona at the Arizona Memorial. I believe there are five remaining, and for, I guess, various health reasons or whatnot, they're not going to be able to attend. And that's really sad.
It was our Pacific Fleet. It was Battleship Row. Five of eight battleships were destroyed. Three destroyers were destroyed. Seven other ships were sunk or severely damaged. And more than 200 aircraft were destroyed. Boy, that was something.
Celebrity birthday today. And this one is close to me. This is my boyhood hero. I would take my plastic wiffle ball bat, and I had my Cincinnati Reds helmet, and I would practice his stance, that classic open stance, holding the bat up high. Nothing flashy about it. But celebrating birthday number 71 today, as the announcer used to say at Old Riverfront Stadium, number five. You'd have like an echo on number five. The catcher, Johnny, bench. And he always said it. He always said the names twice. His birthday today. How about this? After Johnny Bench had announced he was going to retire in 1983, on September 17th of that year, they had Johnny Bench night. And wow, you stepped up to the plate on your night and you do this.
The 0-1 swung on and hit well to left field. Get out of here, baseball! They scored! Oh my God! You believe it? Johnny Bench has tied it up. Amazing! Absolutely amazing!
The old left-hander, Joe Nuxhall. That just gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, one of the greats, Johnny Bench. December 7th. It was today in 1963.
Why today doesn't suck?
Here's something I bet you didn't know.
Oh, I bet I did.
Instant replay was used for the very first time during the Army-Navy football game.
You know, I had heard that. If you had asked me that, like if we played trivia, if that, I probably would have gotten it wrong.
It was on CBS, did it? And, CBS. You know, now we look in the NFL, you can't have the NFL without instant replay, but that the first time it was ever used was today in 1963.
Hmm.
December 7th. It was today in 1982.
Why today doesn't suck?
The first execution by lethal injection. Because before that, they were either shooting you with the firing squad, they were putting you in the electric chair. But today in 1982, the first execution by lethal injection. And I've always said the issue I have with that is that these animals who have murdered innocent people, they get to die by being put to sleep. I've always said that. They get two shots. You know, most of us...
Three, actually.
Three shots. Most of us will die. We're going to feel it one way or another, whether it's going to be short-term or whether it's going to be long-term. But these animals get to be put to sleep, like our pets. And, December 7th. Hey, today was the day the first state became a state in the United States of America. Do you know which state it was?
Yes, I do.
In 1787.
Why today doesn't suck?
It's right there on their license plates in the state of Delaware.
Yeah, state that
the first state.
Most Americans don't even realize is there at this point. What happens in Delaware? I mean, but the very first state, that little state. December 7th. It was today in 1989.
Why today doesn't suck?
Sugar Ray Leonard fights Roberto Duran for the third and final time. Now, that wasn't the fight that they had here in the Superdome where Roberto Duran famously said, no mas.
Right.
This last fight, the third and final Sugar Ray Leonard Roberto Duran fight, was in Las Vegas at the Mirage Hotel.
Ain't there no more.
And Sugar Ray Leonard beat the lackluster Roberto Duran. So when they fought three times, Sugar Ray beat him two out of the three times.
Okay. It was on this date. No, why do I keep saying November? December 7th. It was 2008.
Why today doesn't suck?
I've got croissant crumbs all over my paperwork over here. That's part of the problem. 2008. Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend were honored at the Kennedy Center Honors for their contributions to American culture as the two most important members of The Who. You probably, you could probably expound upon this one. It was on this date, December 7th, 1993.
Why today doesn't suck?
Guns N' Roses announced that their cover of Charles Manson's Look at Your Game Girl will stay on the cover's album, The Spaghetti Incident? Despite protests, it was also announced that royalties will go to the son of a Manson family victim. I don't think, I don't believe I've ever heard that song.
It's not one of their best.
It was it one of Manson's best.
It's the only one that went on an album that went on to sell a few million copies.
Right, because my favorite, when you know my favorite Charles Manson song that's at the end of the movie Helter Skelter, 1976, played by Steve Railsback, who would go on to play Ed Gein. How about that for your acting resume? You play Charles Manson, and then 20-plus years later, you play Ed Gein. Typecasting, maybe?
A couple of psychopaths, yeah.
My favorite Charles Manson song goes a little something like this. Your world ain't nothing but a garbage can. Your world ain't nothing but a garbage can.
Hey, you sound just like him.
Thank you.
Today,
it was uncanny.
December 7th, a horrible day. A day that'll live in infamy on the Long Island Railroad. Today in 1993.
Why today doesn't suck?
Lunatic Colin Ferguson gets on that packed train that went from Manhattan to Long Island that people took every day to commute.
Right.
And he just started shooting just random people. When it was all said and done, six people were dead. 19 others were shot and injured. And Colin Ferguson was the guy that did it. He admitted it, and he had a deep-seated hatred of white people. December 7th, today in 2001.
Why today doesn't suck?
A remake of a movie hit theaters, and it ended up being very successful. I'll give you a hint. I mentioned Las Vegas earlier because that's where the third and final Sugar Ray Leonard Roberto Duran fight happened today.
Las Vegas-based remake?
A movie about something about Las Vegas. Think about it. Rat Pack.
Oh, Ocean's 11.
Yes!
George, don't scream at me.
George Clooney stars in the Frank Sinatra role in the Ocean's 11 remake. Yeah, you know, it was a great...
Never seen it.
It was a great remake. I like the original, too.
I didn't see that one either. I need to get in and stay in more. I was going to say get out more, but I need to stay in more.
And then Ocean's 11 went on to make several more follow-ups to that, including Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13, and George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Don Cheadle, Andy Garcia, Julia Roberts. Pretty big names.
Big names. Big cast.
And that's all I got there, Brewster.
Well, and that is a segment that we call... Oh, and by the way, happy National Cotton Candy Day on a segment that we call...
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
You big cotton candy fan?
I used to be.
I don't think I've had cotton candy in, well, I don't want to say how many years. A long time.
All right, coming up next on the show, we have a follow-up on a story that we did yesterday about a couple in Slidell who the police were looking for. I have a follow-up. That's next on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7.
Bayou.
Bayou.
New Orleans only classic rock. So the other night in Tennessee, they executed death row convict David Earl Miller. But they executed him with the electric chair.
Really?
He was old school. He's an OG.
Right.
And he didn't want the lethal injection. He said, if I'm going out, if you're going to kill me here in Tennessee, put me in the electric chair.
Old Sparky.
So for his last meal, Tennessee death row convict David Earl Miller ordered fried chicken, mashed potatoes, biscuits, and coffee. You know, even though he was going out in the electric chair, he chose coffee because he wanted to get an extra jolt. And I hear...
Good audio.
I hear Tennessee's Death House is famous for its fried chicken. Prisoner says to die for. And he did pass on dessert, saying that, come on,
he's don't care
what the future
weight.
Holds. You right. still got to yeah, exactly. keep an eye on your weight.
Right.
That. All right, coming up on the show, I'm going to tell you about two stupid couples here in the New Orleans metropolitan region. One, a follow-up story, what we talked about yesterday, a Slidell couple, and another in Kenner. Wait till you hear what these two idiot couples did on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock, the John Osterlin Morning Show, brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans, and Lamarck Ford.
Coming up in 30 minutes, a conversation we'll hear that you had yesterday with a gentleman by the name of Bill Edwards. And Bill Edwards contacted us earlier this week as we were talking about the funeral of George H.W. Bush and how he was shot down and the rescue, which was caught on film.
World War II.
And Bill Edwards' father was actually the pilot who rescued him.
Yeah.
And so he got in touch with us, and you talked to him for about 5 or 6 minutes yesterday. We're going to play that back in about 30 minutes.
He's got a couple of extremely interesting stories.
Yes.
That's coming up. All right, I've got a story here, two different stories about two different stupid couples locally here in New Orleans. The first one is a follow-up. If you were listening to the show yesterday, you heard us tell the story about how Slidell police were looking for this couple because they were seen on video in Walmart in Slidell stealing a motorized scooter and a cell phone from a military veteran. And we were talking about yesterday how if you're ever thinking about stealing something and you're out on the street or you're in some, don't even, you shouldn't even try it. Because everywhere now, inside and outside, pretty much everywhere is on video tape, is being video recorded. And so yesterday, we said, if you know William Vauder and or Karen Vauder, I believe they're married, they are being looked for by the Slidell police for stealing the motorized scooter and the iPhone 6.
So we have an update?
Of a veteran. Yes. Well, after they were all over the news and...
That's the update, Sounder?
You had a morning radio guy talking about them all day yesterday morning.
I thought that was the scabies update. Isn't that the scabies update?
Scabies?
Whatever. Need the scooter update, too.
Well, the Vauders turned themselves in. And no, they didn't turn themselves in. They didn't show up to the police station in Slidell on the stolen scooter that they stole.
But would have been fun, though.
But they did turn themselves in to the Slidell Police Department after stealing a 75-year-old military veteran's motorized scooter and his iPhone 6. And now that's
part of the reason is I don't know when we're ever going to have a scabies story again. So I like this and I like using it.
No. Not scabies. And now hopefully that the 75-year-old military veteran got his motorized scooter and his iPhone 6 back.
Yes.
Maybe he can go and he could, it's Christmas time, he could update his iPhone 6 to go get the 10. Maybe somebody would like to do that for him.
Yes.
But that's, there you go. These people must have saw themselves on the local news. Maybe they turned on our show yesterday morning. And
or they may have seen themselves, too.
Yeah, and maybe they heard their names on our show. Who knows? But William Vauder and...
Well, we'll take credit for it. How about that?
His wife, Karen Vauder, turned themselves in. They'll probably tell you. We didn't know the scooter and the iPhone 6 was owned by a 75-year-old military veteran. They just thought they saw the scooter. They didn't know who owned it. They wanted it.
Sorry.
They had it for a couple of days, and now they turned themselves in.
You know, there are people, and I'm not saying it applies in this particular instance, but there are people who see things, and they don't see anyone around it, and it's like, hey, I like that. I'll have that. That's some good stuff there. I'll have that scooter.
Well, those days are over because everywhere is on video.
Right.
Everywhere. There are cameras everywhere.
But some people aren't affected by that. They'll take it anyway.
So that's stupid couple number one. Here in Slidell. Here's stupid couple number two. Woman tried to smuggle drugs to boyfriend in Gretna jail. And these two are both from Kenner. They were arrested after the woman tried to smuggle drugs to her boyfriend while he was jailed at the Jefferson Parish Correctional Center in Gretna.
And they're having none of that.
37-year-old Lauren Sanchez and her boyfriend, 23-year-old James Galvez. Wow, she's robbing the cradle. She's 37 and he's 23?
No, that's a separate charge.
And I'm
let's take these crimes one at a time.
And I'm looking at her mugshot. If she wasn't a drug addict, she'd be hot. Because she's got red marks all over her face, and that's probably because she's a meth addict.
Have you ever thought about writing for Hallmark?
Lauren Sanchez. Any relation to the Dirty Sanchez? She ended up getting herself arrested because she tried smuggling drugs to her boyfriend who was in the jail over there at Gretna. She attempted to get drugs to him. The drugs were intercepted on their way into jail. The sheriff's office over there in Jefferson Parish declined to reveal the type of drug Sanchez tried to smuggle, but by looking at her mugshot, it looks like she's on meth. Because if she was just smoking weed, she wouldn't be as hideous looking. And like I said, if she didn't have the drug habit, she's an attractive woman. But that's what drugs will do to you. And this isn't the first story that we've read around here about people trying to smuggle drugs into prison. It was only last week. It was not only the dumbest thing I read all week, it was the dumbest thing I read all year, and it was the dumbest thing I think I've read in my life. A guy was arrested here in New Orleans for trying to scale the wall at the Orleans Parish Jail 2.0.
To get back in.
Yeah, and he had a backpack full of dope, and he tried breaking into prison. And now he's staying in that prison that he tried breaking into. And
I think he has a new nickname there. It's called Wrong Way.
And over at this prison we're talking about now in Gretna, the Jefferson Parish Correctional Center, someone just a few months ago got arrested, and we did that story. They went to the garbage can outside the jail, and they threw a big bag of drugs in the garbage can because they thought the person on the inside had some sort of work release program where he got to go empty the garbage outside, but that didn't happen, and the authorities found the drugs. And so this 37-year-old woman, drug addict, Lauren Sanchez, arrested for trying to smuggle drugs or get drugs, deliver drugs to her 23-year-old boyfriend, James Galvez, over there the other day at the jail in Gretna, the Jefferson Parish Correctional Center. How stupid do you have to be to try to get people drugs in jail? The best way to do that and the easiest way to do that, you just pay one of the deputies. You pay one of the cops. That's what happens here at Orleans Parish all the time.
Hmm.
You know, you go give the cop, because they don't make that much money. You give them $100 and you give them a big bag of dope. Look, I'm not telling you to do this, but that's the way to get drugs into a local jail. And it's the same over in Jefferson Parish. It might be a little bit more than $100, but you give the cop some money and then you give him the dope. Again, I'm not telling you to do that, but you have a better chance that way than just to walk in through the door with dope on you, like dope hidden somewhere.
Do you actually think there are people listening who think that you were telling them to do that?
Well, I just have to be clear here.
Okay.
Because I don't advocate breaking the law on this radio program.
It's never happened in 2 years that you're the clear one, but okay.
And of course, you don't do that. I was just saying if the thought ever crossed your mind.
That's, yes.
That's how you go about it.
Yeah. Here's your updates.
All right. Coming up on the show. Hey, good news over at Ochsner Hospital. They're raising their minimum wage to $12 an hour for 1,200 employees. I think that's good. They decided to do that. They didn't have the government holding guns to their head making them do that. We'll explain coming up on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Boy, have you seen what's been going on Wall Street with the stock market the last few days? incredible drops, incredible gains going up and down. It's insane. As a matter of fact, the other day, he went down 800 points. Kim Kardashian lost her ass. But it seems to be heading back now in the right direction, the old Dow Jones Industrial Average. But keep an eye on that. I always I've got the lazy eye, the wandering eye. I always keep one eye on that, and hopefully there'll be good things happening today there. So I saw this story: Ochsner Hospital raising their minimum wage to $12 an hour for 1,200 employees. You see, this is the way to do it. This is a business, and it's up to them to pay their employees what they want to pay their employees. It's not the government's job to hold a gun to businesses' heads, make laws saying that you have to pay $15 an hour or $12 an hour for your minimum wage employees. I like this. As Ochsner Health System raising their minimum wage for the 1,200 employees, or for 1,200 of their employees across the system, and that's going to start on January 20th. The minimum wage at Ochsner was $8.10 an hour, and that's going to go up to $12 an hour starting January 20th. For their employees working in various areas, such as emptying the garbage, environmental services, patient care, patient services. The health system announced this yesterday. Ochsner conducted a comprehensive human resources assessment of employees' needs, and they said this is what a lot of their employees were saying that they wanted, so they did it. And that's what business is all about. They did it because they wanted to do it. Coming up next, we're going to talk to this guy whose father is the guy that rescued George H.W. Bush from the waters after he was shot down during World War II. And he's local, too. That's next on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans and Lamarck Ford. So on the show earlier this week, we talked about the death and of former President George H.W. Bush, 41. And boy, did he have a send-off or what? First nationally in Washington, D.C., and then yesterday down in Texas, he had another big memorial at the church that he and his wife had been going to in Houston for the last 50 years.
It'd be over in Texas. If you go down, you're not going to get there. You'd have to go over in Texas.
Over in Texas.
Yeah.
And then they put his body on a train, and then the train went from Houston to where he's going to be buried on the grounds of his presidential library, which is on the campus of Texas A&M University. And that train ride was pretty cool. There was a lot of people who lived in between Houston and College Station, and they lined up next to the train tracks to give him a farewell. You don't see that very often.
That was
pretty neat. And again, I told you I liked George Herbert Walker Bush. I liked his son, too. I know they weren't perfect. But in my opinion, George H.W. Bush's biggest fault was he was too nice. He was nice to a fault. So when we were talking about that during the week, someone called into the radio station and said, "Hey, I got a story for you. I heard you talking about how H.W., when he was in World War II in the Pacific, the plane he was flying got shot down. The other couple of guys that were on his plane died. They didn't make it. He ended up in the ocean where he was just hanging out waiting for the Japanese to come and catch him and kill him. And then suddenly an American submarine comes from out of nowhere and rescues him. And that rescue was on videotape. And I believe it's a YouTube video now, and everybody could see it. Well, wouldn't you know, the guy who was listening and called in said his father was the one who was on that submarine who rescued him. So we said, yeah, we want to hear that story. And so we talked to him on the phone. Joining us now on the Celebrity Hotline is a guy named Bill Edwards. And Bill let us know when we were talking about the passing of George Herbert Walker Bush. He let us know that he was a part of the Bush administration and something going all the way back to World War II. Hey, Bill, explain to us, how were you a part of the George H.W. Bush administration?
Well, back in 92 and 93, by virtue of the relationship with my father and Big George Bush, which goes back to World War II, I was able to go ahead and apply for a position in the Bush administration, which they call a political appointee. And that took me over to the oil and gas section of the U.S. Department of Interior, which at that time was called Minerals Management Service. And so I went up there as an employee of the Department of the Interior, but under the political guise of the administration, which is what political appointees do. They pretty much try and administer those guidelines of the new administration.
So you said that your father probably helped you get that job because he knew George Herbert Walker Bush. They both served together in World War II?
Well, what had happened was just kind of iconically interesting. Dad was a football player at LSU in the 40s. All people went ROTC, either Army or Navy. So Dad went Navy. Upon graduation, he ended up as a Navy submarine officer in World War II out in the Pacific. And all vessels were taxed with picking up anybody who might be shot down or survivors of ships that may be torpedoed or whatever during that period. So one afternoon, they got the call that there was a downed pilot right off of Chichijima, which is in the Bonin Islands in the Pacific. And all officers on the submarines at that time were multitasked. One of my other father's duties was that he was the photography officer. Okay, so here they're doing a routine pickup of a pilot out in the Pacific and so forth. And my dad is filming this. Hence the film, the black and white film that everybody has seen now. If they go to the Bush Library, it's also, I think, in the D-Day Museum and so forth like that. But so they picked up George Bush, and right as he was passing the conning tower, he looks right up at my father who's doing the filming. And that film became iconic in that you could recognize George Bush. But what made it interesting was that that film was on a Super 8 roll that was in the top dresser drawer of my father's dressers for 35 years. And as a little kid, like kids do, wandering through daddy's drawers and so forth, looking for extra change, I used to see this little film, and I'd pull some of it out, but it was in black and white, and it was so small you could barely recognize anything. So hence, Bush is running for president now, having been vice president under Reagan. So there was some publicity out there that someone started saying, well, he was really just a spoiled rich kid, and he never really was shot down in the Pacific. He never was anything like that. And they said he was a wimp. Hence what was the wimp factor, which was going around during that election. Okay. So my dad is listening to this on the news one morning, like you do when you're reading a paper in the morning. And so he decides to call the Bush headquarters, Bush for President headquarters. And he was received with complete sarcasm by the young man who answered the phone, because they used to get a lot of crank calls, you know, and stuff like this. So anyway, it ended when my dad said, look, I also have a film, and if you would like to see it, I will send it up to you. So he said, sure, no problem. We'd love to see it, thinking completely that it was false. Okay. So the only thing that my dad asked was that if you can't use it, please send it back. So he sent it up to the Bush for President headquarters. A week later, in the morning, I was sitting at the table with Dad. The phone rings, and it's George. And he says, Bill, been a few years. How are you? I want to thank you for sending up that film. I said, here's the head of my campaign. And the gentleman said, Commander Edwards, we appreciate it. He says, do you know what you've done here? And he says, well, yeah, I've proven that he's been a down pilot. He says, no, you destroyed the wimp factor right away.
Bill Edwards.
And that did.
Bill Edwards, that's an incredible story. Because your father and those guys on that submarine just did their job. They rescued an American who was in the water. They had no idea what he was going to or who he was going to go on to be. And the fact that not only you hung on to that tape and that they remembered each other, that's pretty incredible.
Oh, I first met George Bush when Dad was in the Pentagon when I was 7 years old. He came over for dinner, and he was on his way to China, I believe, at the time. And, you know, all officers, when you go to Washington, D.C., it's a desk job in the Pentagon, and it's not as exciting as being active service Navy. My dad later became a fighter pilot after World War II. He actually flew in Korea, was shot down in Korea. He flew in Vietnam early in the stage before we were officially involved in Vietnam, but helping the Diem regime. And so they became very good friends. But also, see, nobody came out to pick George up off of the submarine. He stayed for the following 32 days of the war patrol and shared my dad's cabin with him. And the submarine made him a lookout because all fighter pilots could recognize Japanese planes better than even our own lookouts on the submarine. So they became very good friends. And the actual day that my father passed away on January 30th, 1993, it's ironic. I was at our family home in Diamond Head, and the phone rings in the morning, and it's George Bush calling just to say hello to my father. And I explained to him that Dad was in the hospital, so forth. But for 25 minutes, I had a conversation with a gentleman who happened to be the former president of the United States, and they're such wonderful people. And he was relating about my father and his relationship over the years. And, you know, you just can't get much more rewarding than that.
I bet. Well, Bill Edwards, look, we appreciate that story. That's a great story. And we appreciate you listening to the radio station. And it's good to know there are people like you out there. That's great stuff.
John, you're a wonderful person, and it's a great station, and I appreciated it. And when I heard your snippet yesterday afternoon, I said, you know, they may be interested in hearing about this, you know, that someone from Louisiana and LSU actually was part of the rescue of George Bush.
We sure are, and you added a lot to our show. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
You Bye-bye. Too. How cool is that? That famous film of George W. Bush being rescued from the ocean in World War II was taken by not only a Louisiana native, a guy who played football for LSU before he went and did that. Boy, that was that's cool. That's good to know. It's something I'll never forget. Coming up on the show, it's the dumbest thing I read all week. Stay tuned for that and more on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Scientists now say Botox may help prevent atrial fibrillation after heart surgery. How cool is that? And there's a beneficial side effect as well.
Yes.
It makes your heart look years younger. Botox. All right, coming up on the show, we'll tell you the dumbest thing I read all week. And as always, there'll be a couple of runners up.
That's why we call it the dumbest things we read all week.
That's what we call it?
That's what we call it now, yes. Remember we talked about this earlier?
We did.
Yes.
Well, that's next.
Yes. It's cleaner that way. And then we don't have to do this. See, it's just cleaner. The dumbest things we read all week.
Coming up next on the John Osterlin Morning Show here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans, Anne Lamarck Ford. So it's Friday morning. It's about 8:30, 8:35 or so in between there. And this is when we tell you the dumbest thing that we read all week. And there's always more than one. So it's the dumbest things we read all week. And I will have the first runner-up, and then Brewster will have a runner-up, and then I'll tell you the winner. I'm sure if you follow the news or pay any attention to social media, you saw this one this week. PETA. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They, I know it's hard to believe there's something dumber than this, but there is. But PETA is telling us that they want us to change the way we talk and say certain things.
Right.
Because it's offensive to animals. For instance.
Say that again. It's offensive to the animals.
Yeah. According to PETA.
Right.
They don't want us to say things anymore like, I bring home the bacon.
Right.
because that evidently that's offensive to pigs?
Yes, very much so.
Have you ever seen an offended pig?
Well, not for something that I said.
But that's that's one of the things, and they had a list of things.
Sure.
That are I guess clichés or
right. Old axioms or old saws or don't say like a bat out of hell. That's offensive to bats. Don't say kill two birds with one stone. That's a no-no.
Offensive to birds?
Yes.
You can't say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. They'd rather you say that about a human being.
Yes.
You can't teach an old man new tricks. You see, the old man wouldn't be offended, but the old dog would be offended.
Right.
This is PETA. And look, you're not going to find people that love animals more than Brewster and me. I mean, I love dogs, I love cats, I love pigs. But I never in my life ever thought that I was offending an animal when I said, every dog has its day. Don't bring home the bacon.
Beat a dead horse. Don't say that. Especially these ones that have some sort of perceived action verb built in.
So
don't say be the guinea pig.
So according to PETA, is it dead horses that get offended, or is it the fact that we're beating an animal that is offensive?
I can't speak for PETA, but there's another layer to this onion, of this dumb onion. Instead of saying kill two birds with one stone, you're supposed to say feed two birds with one scone. Do birds eat scones? Mm. Like a nice blueberry scone with a little butter?
Scones are good.
Don't say be the guinea pig, say be the test tube. Until that becomes offensive to test tubes.
Which will happen in the near future.
Don't say beat a dead horse, say feed... I can't read this. Say feed a fed horse. Well, that kind of doesn't make sense. Don't say bring home the bacon, say bring home the bagels. Don't say take the bull by the horns, say take the flower by the thorns.
See, it's because of this idiocracy. This is so dumb that it's hard to take anything PETA says seriously.
Right, anything that could be actually beneficial to the health and well-being of animals.
Because people like us, we love animals, but then we see PETA being so stupid. As a matter of fact, it's so dumb that it makes you wonder how we're ever going to take anything that anyone from PETA says seriously ever again.
Crying wolf. Exactly.
Hey, don't say that.
You can't say cry wolf.
How dare you say cry wolf?
Like that Aha song. Not take on me, but the other one. Cry wolf, woo, try not to worry now. That's offensive.
You know, Brewster, in the year 2018, there are so many Americans that are so offended by the smallest things. I think we need to take back our right to offend people again. I think we need to fight to offend again.
Okay.
Because if someone is offended by something, that's their problem. It's not my problem.
Okay.
Because nothing offends me. So I want to start a campaign. Next week, we're going to start it on the show. We want to bring back America's right and Americans' right to offend people.
And we're going to put it on the website.
It's called free speech.
Nebraska principal reportedly bans candy canes, says the Nebraska principal reportedly bans candy canes, says J-Shape stands for Jesus.
That's runner-up number two in the dumbest thing that we read all week.
Dateline, Elkhorn, Nebraska. An elementary school principal was placed on leave after telling teachers to avoid decorating their classrooms with Christmas-themed ornamentations. That's an unnecessary word, ornaments. So as not to offend those who don't celebrate the holiday. The principal at Manchester Elementary, identified as Jennifer Sinclair, sent out a memo earlier this week with guidelines as to what is considered appropriate for classroom decorations and assignments. Teachers were reportedly told the generic winter themes, such as sledding and scarves, and the frozen character Olaf were acceptable. Decorations that included Santa, Christmas trees, reindeer, green and red colored items, and even candy canes, however, were not acceptable by the elementary school. The candy canes were prohibited because the principal deemed them to have religious significance. Quote, historically, the J shape is J for Jesus. The red is for the blood of Christ, and the white is a symbol of his resurrection.
Did you know that that's what candy canes? That was at the origin of the candy cane when they made the candy cane.
Well, is that really true? I mean, we're assuming that. Which I to answer your question, I didn't do my homework. I didn't follow up on the
whether
story.
Whether it's true or not, does that mean? Let's say it's true. Does that mean we can't hang a candy cane from a Christmas tree? Does that mean we can't enjoy a delicious candy cane?
She continues, this would include different colored candy canes as well. You know, you might have like a candy cane with Mardi Gras colors, and I've seen those before. She continues, this is the principal, Ms. Sinclair. I feel uncomfortable that I have to get this specific, but for everyone's comfort, I will. The Elkhorn School District told Fox News in a statement that the memo, quote, does not reflect the policy of Elkton Public Schools regarding holiday symbols in the school, end of quote, meaning that, of course, she went rogue on the Christmas-themed decorations. The district's policy states that, quote, Christmas trees, Santa Claus, and Easter eggs and bunnies are considered to be secular, seasonal symbols, and therefore may be displayed as teaching aids provided that they do not disrupt the educational program for students.
I mean, the same type of person that is offended by a candy cane, she should be working for PETA. She should be offended why if you people say something like you're going to kill two birds with one stone. How dare you? You're going to offend birds.
People for the ethical, too much time on their hands. That's what I call PETA.
Brewster.
See, here's my next question, my final question, my exit question to the principal is, how many students complained about the damn candy canes? I'm going to guess not.
People that are offended by things like that, I think life is too much for them. I think they're in the wrong life.
You know, that's interesting because yesterday on the program,
yes,
you mentioned that people who were allergic to peanuts
and who could die from smelling or eating a peanut
or being around a peanut, life, this world may not be for them.
Yeah, maybe this life isn't for them. I'm just throwing that out there. If you're that easily offended, maybe check with the next life. Maybe that's more for you.
Wow.
All right.
Therefore,
here is the dumbest thing I read all week.
Oh, wait a minute. I can't do that.
The
dumbest thing I read all week. This better be good, by the way. After those first two, this better be good.
Yeah. Habitual public serial self-pleasurer gets arrested for doctor's office incident.
All right, you make it to.
So you know what this guy does. He's a habitual serial self-pleasurer. He's one of these guys that can't stop whipping it out in public and then.
Just continue. Keep reading.
Here's what his name is, Brewster.
Oh, boy.
And before I give you his name, if we lived in England, instead of Mr., don't they call men Master?
No, Master is a young man. Master is a young man of.
Well, this guy's
like,
not
in other
that
words,
old.
In other words, my grandmother would write me, send me a birthday card, and it would say Master Brewster.
Master Brewster.
That's right. Apparently, I'm a Master Brewster.
Well, this habitual serial public self gratifier, his name is Brian Bates. So you could call him.
Yeah, you tried to hammer it in there on me, but no.
You could call him Master.
You could. Maybe when he was younger, he was called that.
A man with a history of exposing himself in public was arrested after cops found him pleasuring himself in front of women at a Paramus, New Jersey doctor's office.
Oh, come on.
Brian Bates, or his nickname, Master. He was charged.
See, it's you know, and then like second time, it continues to go downhill. It doesn't go uphill; it goes downhill. I'm just letting you know.
Well, I've never watched the TV show Downton Abbey, but they said that's what they would call him if he was in the show Downton Abbey.
If he was a young man, yes.
He was charged.
A prepubescent young man, shall we say?
Oh, I'm sure when he was younger, he did this too. This isn't something that you just wake up at the age of 35 and start doing. He was charged with criminal open lewdness for the incident that happened the other day. The officers went to the doctor's office for a report of a man exposing himself to patients. Now, if he's doing this in a doctor's office, exposing himself, you might be thinking he has some sort of maybe disease. But no, his only disease is mental, in his head.
Right.
Upon police arrival, the officers found Bates in the bathroom with the door open while pleasuring himself. And he was also...
He took it out.
He was also doing something with the toilet bowl scrubber in the doctor's office. So he was multitasking. I can't tell
That's
you
enough.
What he was doing
yeah,
on the
please
air.
Don't.
With,
yeah,
just
please,
imagine.
Please don't.
He was sticking the toilet bowl scrubber in maybe the most dirtiest place you could outside of a toilet.
You know, we have some time off coming up. We don't need any extra time off.
This act was witnessed by several adult females who were in the office. How was your Friday? You know, besides this, besides the man whipping it out and doing that and then taking the toilet scrubber and sticking it, besides that, it was a great day at work.
May I get this line in before we get fired? Reach for comment. His mother said, "You're treating your body like an amusement park."
Yeah, like a bathroom at the amusement park. That's how he's treating his body.
You got all this paella?
This guy's been arrested for publicly whipping it out and pleasuring himself since 1997. And that's when they couldn't.
Didn't I offer to give you real money if you stopped doing
that? That's when a young Brian Bates was young enough, age-wise, to be called Master.
Boy, I don't want to think about that. You're spending too much time thinking about this. You really are. I'm worried about you.
And I'll finish this.
Please do.
I'll finish this by saying what I always say, and you always say no when I say this.
What's that?
But, Brewster, if this is the kind of activity that did it for me...
No.
If I couldn't stop going outside into public, into doctor's offices, and just dropping my pants and starting to pleasure myself,
if that's what did it
for me, I would find the nearest rooftop of the highest building and run and jump off of it.
You know... Upon further review, I'm starting to support that. Maybe you're not right for this world.
And Mr. Bates, Bayou 95.7.
Thank you, Donut Boy.
That is the dumbest thing I read all week. And if you want to see this guy's mugshot in a minute or two, go to Bayou957.com. Go to our website because every Friday we put the dumbest thing I read all week right up there. And we'll put it on our Facebook page, too. Be a part of our radio station on Facebook. On Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. A Georgia woman spent 3 months in jail after cops mistook the cotton candy in her car for crystal meth. Doctors warn that stuff will kill you. And the meth is dangerous, too. How can you believe 3 months in jail it took them to figure this out? The hell's going on over there?
Some damn fine police work.
Coming up next, it's our commercial free ride. And comedian Kevin Hart, he just had to remove himself as host of the Academy Awards for some things he tweeted a few years ago. We'll explain coming up on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans only classic rock. Led Zeppelin there. Zeppelin! So one of the biggest falls from grace we've ever seen in America is the bicyclist, Lance Armstrong. You might remember, we all loved him. He won 7 Tour de France's. And, he's on TV commercials making
millions. Tours de France, I think, sounds a little better. But go ahead, yeah.
He was making millions in endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
And then it...
Did great work for the Be Strong, Stay Strong, the cancer, supporting cancer victims.
Recovering from cancer, I think he had...
Livestrong, I can't think of
Yes, Livestrong.
Livestrong.
Testicular cancer, I think he was living through that, and then it came out, and then he said over and over and over again he never cheated, and then it came to find out he did cheat. He doped. He was one of the most famous dopers in sports, and so they stripped all of his 7 Tours de France
there you go.
Away from him, and that was that. And he's still in court. He's being sued for millions of dollars by former endorsers and things like that. Brewster, he just got very lucky. He's 47 years old now, and he just reached a settlement, and he only has to pay $5 million.
Wow.
And if you say, well, $5 million, He was looking at paying upwards of $100 million. But the $5 million is chump change for him. Why? He was one of the earliest investors in Uber. He, in 2009, right, he invested $100,000 in Uber. And today, that's worth $3 billion. Mm-hmm. So only 9 years ago, if you had 100 grand and you're thinking, where could I invest it? And you invested it in Uber, mm-hmm, the ride-sharing service. 9 years ago, fast forward 9 years, that $100,000 would be $3 billion. So Lance Armstrong easily has that $5 million that he just settled to pay all of the people that he duped when it came to doping and all right, that. Boy, oh boy.
They were duped and he doped.
Well, he's got cash. Thank you for listening to the show. Ginty is next. Ginty! He's got your music notes at noon. Have a great, safe weekend. We'll chat again Monday morning around 5:30 here on Bayou 95.7.